Blog Talk Radio.
Oh,
the Lord will unfold. Yes, he will.
If you don't mind. Every now and then, I get a little lonely. But you know what? But you, but the real truth, the real truth of Jesus, oh my, tonight, talk about the violence that's going on over in Egypt and all over the world. God is still making things happen. And I just want you to stay focused on what God will do and how the truth can come out. I want to see, can I get a little letter on the air tonight? Some of the stuff that's happening.
Thank you. maintaining your gutters, save that time with Leak Guard's maintenance-free system. Call 1-833-2.
One of the things that I want to tell you tonight, God is still in control. And I want to share with you that wherever you might be living, to Chicago, Detroit, Mississippi, Alabama, wherever, God is still in control. And the violence that we're seeing is the violence of people not loving God. People is not coming the one of God. Exodus 14:14, he said, if my people are called by my name, humble themselves and pray, I will heal the land. And I feel tonight that we need healing. I say our ancestors, but the ancestors of all is a direction. Maybe you Jewish, maybe you Palestinian, maybe you African, maybe you're modern. We need to bring ourselves back to God. It's important for us to know that God is the keeper for our life. And when you read your Bible, Exodus 14:14, he said, Exodus 14:14, he said, step back, Moses. This is my battle. What I'm saying to you, you got people all over the world starving as I speak right now. We got people in Amaria, people in Africa, got floods and storms, tornadoes and coming. We got little babies coming up. And we have to be able to feed the babies. And we got to let rich people stop playing politics with our children's life. If you living in Chicago or you living over in Africa, Kenya, or you living over in Egypt, wherever you living at, we have to come together as one man, as one woman of God. And once we come together as God, he will bless us. Some of you have turned your back against God because things ain't going like you want them to go. It's never going to be like you want it to be. God always got a secret plan. God always got a door open up. This is some of the stuff happening in Washington. Let's listen to it.
Would swing enough votes his direction to become the Speaker of the House in a vote on Tuesday. But 20 Republicans voted for other Republican candidates, denying Jim Jordan the speakership and sending his candidacy to become the next Speaker of the House into another round. Jordan, though, telling reporters he plans to continue to push for their support. We're going to keep going. We had great conversations, great discussions with our colleagues. And frankly, no one. No one in our conference wants to see any type of coalition government with Democrats. So we're going to keep working, and we're going to get to the vote. We got to have a speaker, and it can't be some deal with the Democrats. I mean, frankly, people don't want that. They let the Republicans in a majority. Small majority, I get it. We got 200 votes in the first ballot. I think that's maybe even more than what Kevin got back in January. It was right about where Kevin was. A couple of lots is a vote for us. That's 201. We've had good conversations. We're going to keep working. But after Tuesday's vote, a number of moderate Republicans expressed concerns about continuing to back Representative Jim Jordan, especially if it becomes clear that his speakership could be doomed. Representative Marionette Miller Meeks of Iowa told me that she would only back Jordan on the first ballot, and on the second ballot, she would decline to back him unless he made major changes, instead pushing for a unity candidate with Democrats, something that Representative Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic minority leader, said he wants Republicans to take him up on.
We've got a fight.
Situation in the representatives right now is unreal, unbelievable, and unacceptable. Paging my traditional Republican colleagues It's time to get off the sidelines, break away from the extremists, get in the arena so we can find a bipartisan path forward.
Representative Jordan decided to allow the House to just take one vote on Tuesday, saying he would return Wednesday morning at 11 a.m. for the House's next vote on the speakership. It's not clear whether Jim Jordan will do any better on the second round than he did in the first. Nathaniel Reed, Scripps News, Capitol Hill.
Our congressional correspondent, Nathaniel Reed, as always, Nate, we thank you. So who is Jim Jordan? He represents Ohio's 4th Congressional District, which is north of Columbus, but what else do we know about the pugnacious congressman from just outside Columbus? Scripps News Deputy Political Director Joseph George takes a closer look.
So who is Representative Jim Jordan? Well, on one hand, he's a frequent guest on conservative talk shows, popular on the right, a close ally of former President Donald Trump, and chairman of the influential House Judiciary Committee, a job that comes with subpoena power. On the other hand, though, he's a bit of a contradiction. He's been a member of Congress since 2007, and yet he has railed against the establishment. Congressman Jordan has never had one of his own bills signed into law. Jordan has represented Ohio's 4th Congressional District. He has been endorsed by former President Donald Trump and Fox News Channel's Sean Hannity, a show in which he is a frequent guest on. He is known for taking on the establishment during his career, even though by many metrics he is part of the establishment, whether it was moderate Republicans like former Speaker John Boehner when Boehner was Speaker, Democrats, or even Dr. Anthony Fauci during the height of COVID. He has faced some scandals over the years. He was an assistant coach at The Ohio State University, influential in their wrestling program during a period in which there was an abuse scandal. Jordan, however, has repeatedly denied any involvement or knowledge. Congressman Jordan has faced criticism over the years for his role in the aftermath of the 2020 election. The January 6th committee said that Jordan organized a call in the days prior to January 6th in which he discussed ways to potentially delay the Electoral College certification. Representative Jordan comes from rather modest means. He has one of the lowest net worths of any member of Congress. And while he has raised a lot of money over the years, oftentimes his fundraising is focused on himself and not necessarily other members of Congress. Being in leadership often involves raising money for others. Joe St. George, Scripps News, Washington.
Joe, thank you very much. Still to come, a look at a solution designed to fight gun violence. This time it comes from within the towns and cities that find themselves caught in the crossfire. But there is new information that could mean a rearrest of actor Alec Baldwin. We'll just right after this. And a reminder, we want to hear from you. Call us on the Scripps News, your hotline. The number is toll-free, 1-833-4-SCRIPTS. Share your comments and story ideas with us anytime.
It is important for us to understand what's going on in Washington and what Washington is doing for us. But I want to go back to all the killing and the bombing and all the confusion. It's confusion in your home now. It's confusing when you go downtown to get a job. It's people being bombed and killed over in the East. We see it on TV. They tell us about it. And everybody's hyped. I've seen a group come on TV and say, we got to get hot meals over to the Jews because there ain't no food over there. And they done cut the water off. It's so much a negativity. And you got to be able to cross over to our ancestor, Ashe, and be able to see the truth. Well, the truth will set you free. Psalms 91, Psalms 35, and Psalms 71. I want the night to be a night of healing and a word of God. If my people that are called by my name humble themselves and pray and turn from their wicked ways, I will heal the land. That scripture saying turn from your wicked ways. What do we mean? We mean turn away from your idea that you can control God. The ideas where you're jealous of each other. The ideas where you have turned your back away from your family. And I'm talking about the family of God. For God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have first everlasting life. So God is looking for the right man and the right woman, and he's looking for them that will want to do the right thing. Some of you have turned your back away from God for your son, for your daughter, for your family. The real family is the family of God. Exodus 14:14, God told Moses, Moses, step back. This is not your fight. This is my fight. And I want to tell you this evening, some of the problems you have, you have not given to God. And you blame yourself. You say you have not because you ask not. Let me say that again. You have not because you ask not. That's what the Bible says. That's what God was saying. Whatever you ask God, he's going to give it to you. But when he gives it to you, he's looking for you to obey his word. All the killing that's going on, 7 to 8 years of killing, 7 to 8 years of murder in Detroit and Chicago and different legal things. I want to deal with some of the stuff that's been going on right before our eyes tonight. Don't forget Psalms 91. Don't forget the Psalms I gave you, Mary. You forget and wonder why you didn't get the Psalms. Some of you, you know, I'm praying for the families because it's flat witchcraft with all the killings and murders that's going on.
The meeting stretched 6 hours, nearly half filled with comments, and those tired of needing to make sense.
When you got to go to a gas station with your gun in your hip, when you got to go to a grocery store with your gun in your pocket, that's a man problem.
Just about relationships.
Calvin Tepp hears the frustration every day.
As of this moment, we had 157 murders in the city.
Tepp grew up in New Orleans' 7th Ward. He says he was abused as a child, did drugs at 9 years old, and was in and out of jail into his 20s.
Just want to make a difference.
But because he made it through, because he made it out, he walks the ward daily, trying to be a solitary solution to an inescapable problem.
People see us and they change our life. There are times that they know that we could have went backwards, but we didn't. That's what makes you credible. I do know that everybody wants to see the hood change.
For nearly a decade, Tepp worked for the city as a violent interrupter. He went street by street, meeting with residents, mediating interpersonal disputes. He's part of the growing movement that American cities say, you need to be in the community, cutting off conflicts before they explode.
We do not have a moment to spare.
The movement has even reached the White House. This fall, the Biden administration announced its first-ever White House Office of Gun Violence. Last fall, it greenlit tens of millions of dollars toward community violence intervention, as research suggests it likely has some impact. But here's where the story gets messy.
We came in and shut the program down.
That left in 2020 when he says the city got too involved. The program all but shuttered shortly after, just as homicides began to rise.
If you are looking at the evidence, you can't say that this is a slam dunk.
Dr. Jennifer Avegna worked at a hospital for years before becoming New Orleans Director of Health. She was at that council meeting in January.
You know, will we continue to accept the murder of our children as a way of life, or is a critical disease to be attacked and treated aggressively?
Avegna said the New Orleans Interrupter Program stopped because of the arrival of COVID and issues with infrastructure. But she says it can't be the only solution against gun violence.
There was this idea that this was all you needed. And I think we quickly found out that this doesn't make any sense. It's really unrealistic to ask the same 5 or 6 people to be on call 24/7 and to be in every neighborhood trying to mediate conflicts on the ground.
The city's plan includes giveaways of biometric gun locks and a non-police-based 911 team. At that January meeting, the council voted for a new intervention program run by the health department based out of the hospital, featuring hospital employees as interrupters.
We know that one violent incident generally spawns multiple more. So if you can interrupt the chain at any point, then the downstream event effects are huge.
For cities and communities where gun violence is a constant threat, any solution that works in any way is welcome. Avigno says the street team will eventually come back, that isn't sure he'll rejoin.
You know, we're just trying to do what we can do, Ryan.
But he still walks his ward every day, knowing the frustration people feel, even in the role he can play.
I will really stop allowing people to listen. Some stuff can taste that. But I feel better knowing that I tried.
In New Orleans, I'm Matt Thorne.
Actor Alec Baldwin isn't out of legal trouble, at least not yet. He could face charges again in connection with that fatal shooting on the set of his movie Rust. Prosecutors saying they may recharge the actor with involuntary manslaughter. They say they plan to present their case to a grand jury next month. That first involuntary manslaughter charge against Baldwin was dismissed, but prosecutors there are now saying they have new information. The cinematographer, Lana Hutchins, was killed in the shooting in New Mexico. The director was injured. Baldwin continues to maintain his innocence. Coming up, Ukraine fighting back against Russian forces, this time with a secret weapon. That new element in the fight provided by the United States, a visual investigations correspondent, has been pouring over the video evidence. You have that video for you right after the break. And if you're forgiving us right now, you're looking for programs. Thanks. Find out where to keep watching. ScriptsNews.com/TV.
Sometimes you have to see the violence that go on in Chicago, that go on in Detroit, the violence that go on in Ohio, the violence that go on in Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana, black on black. And don't nobody really speak on it because it's a normal thing. But I'm saying tonight, it's time for us to look at how can we stop the killings and the mass murder of our youth that's going on in our high school, in our college. We just had a young man in Jackson State last night was shot and killed. This young man that came from Chicago, going to school in Jackson, Mississippi, somebody shot and killed him. He done finished high school, going to college, getting his degree. And he wasn't a gangbanger. He wasn't a drug dealer. There's too many guns in these streets. There's too many people got access to guns, but they ain't got no mind. Their mind messed up. People is scared to go to the grocery store. They're scared to go to get gas. They're scared to get up and walk down the street. On their way back, somebody might get shot or they might get shot. So we're dealing in a dangerous situation, and it got to come out, and we have to make it come out. And the way we make it come out, by us coming together, our pastors and ministers have sat down. I don't hear them talking about stop the killing, save the babies. After Sunday morning, they lock the church and they gone to next Sunday. And then we have situation where people are starving. They don't have food to eat. And we're bringing more people in, but we're not taking care of people that we have already here. And what I'm saying to you, look around you. We got people coming from the cartel. We got people that's here, not because they're poor, because they see an opportunity to get a new pair of gym shoes, opportunity to get a cell phone, opportunity to get the rights of your ancestors that fought and died in this country. So we're getting ready to see more and more evil that's taking place in our country. So I want you to be able to look at what's happening over in Egypt, what's happening over in Iran, what's happening right now in Israel, where they want to bomb the whole city and a wall, and America saying, well, we with you, we ain't with that. And that's very important, to deal against that.
By heading south, the only gate to freedom, the Rafah border crossing in Egypt, is closed. There's no aid getting in, no people getting out. And 500 people are dead tonight following an explosion at a hospital in Gaza. In addition to those seeking medical treatment, the hospital is also playing host to Palestinian civilians seeking shelter. Both Israel and Hamas are blaming each other for the blast, Israel saying it was Hamas, Hamas saying it was Israel. The Israeli Defense Ministry saying that a misfired Hamas missile is to blame. Our Israel correspondent Ross Cullen has more from Tel Aviv.
Well, claim and counterclaim on Tuesday after that rocket attack on a hospital in the Gaza Strip left hundreds of people dead. The Israeli Defense Ministry saying it was a group called the Palestinian Islamic Jihad that was responsible. They say that's what their intelligence shows. It was one of the group's rockets that impacted the hospital. That group has denied it, saying it was an Israeli airstrike that hit the hospital. That's also the line that Hamas are sticking with. Israel denies this. And the Prime Minister saying on Tuesday it was a barbaric attack. There has been widespread condemnation across the international community for the attack on the hospital, which left hundreds of people dead. The videos online certainly show bloody chaos and lots of bodies following the attack. There have been ramifications as well. The Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas cancelling his meeting with Joe Biden and saying that he will be instead respecting the 3 days of mourning that he has called for. There have been protests on Tuesday night, local time, in Amman, in Jordan, in Beirut, in Lebanon, also in the West Bank, and Hezbollah called for Wednesday to be a day of rage. So there is a very, very tense atmosphere in the Middle East tonight, with the US President Joe Biden due here on Wednesday for talks with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. There will be a lot on his agenda, speaking about the status of the hostages, the humanitarian crisis, his support from the United States for Israel, and especially the ramifications, consequences, the aftermath of this rocket attack on a Gaza hospital on Tuesday night, local time, in the Gaza Strip. Ross Cullen, Scripps News, Tel Aviv.
Ross, thank you very much. President Biden out with a statement just moments ago saying he is outraged and deeply saddened by that deadly attack at the hospital in Gaza City. The president's statement goes on to say, immediately upon hearing the news, he talked to King Abdullah of Jordan and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel, adding he has directed his national security team to continue gathering information about exactly what happened. Earlier today on Scripps News, Florida Senator Rick Scott saying no aid money should go towards this crisis, not one single cent. Scott saying the responsibility to take care of Palestinians lies with Hamas.
Hamas is the one that's causing death in Gaza. And by the way, the Egyptians open their border. I mean, they want to support, they want to support Gaza, open their border. Keep them safe. But Hamas is out killing citizens that are trying to evacuate, slowing down citizens that are wanting to evacuate. This is Hamas doing this. They want human shields. So right now, there's not a dime of foreign aid that ought to be going to Palestinians. We need to get our, we need to get our citizens back, our hostages back safely, and everybody in Hamas, every member of Hamas needs to be destroyed. They need to be killed.
Well, we're going to John Jordan now. He is a former naval intelligence officer who works at the Stanford Hoover Institute, and he's also an expert on American involvement in the Middle East. John, thanks for being with us tonight. President Biden will be in Israel on Wednesday. His meetings, though, with Arab leaders have already been canceled in the wake of that hospital attack. How does the White House manage the fallout from everything that just unfolded just today within hours in the Middle East?
Well, Joe, they should have seen this coming. The idea of these types of attacks or atrocity photos and the types of things that Hamas is bound to do, and they didn't want to give Joe Biden that stage with the King of ordained they were going to do something like this, whether it was Islamic Jihad, which there are some reports that's where the rockets came from. But, and they should have seen this coming, and rather than commit the president to this sort of high-profile meeting that they're now going to have to walk back.
So, John, I think here's the question, which is that there are people who believe what you're saying is absolutely right. The problem is, in the Middle East, it's going to fall on deaf ears.
And that's absolutely right, too, Bill. There's different audiences being played to here, right? So a lot of the leadership in a lot of these modern Arab countries, including Saudi Arabia, genuinely do fear Iran and would like a rapprochement with Israel. However, sentiment on the Arab street or in public opinion kind of constrains what a lot of these leaders can or can't do with Israel. And that's why Hamas did this, because they knew that Israel would have to retaliate, and that would stir up a lot of these ancient sentiments and slow down, if not stop, any sort of relationship building or alliance building that be a bulwark against their Iranian power. But that's who these pictures, these images are designed to appeal to. It's Arab public opinion, and that's the primary audience here. And you're right that there's no winning around this.
I asked our correspondent on the ground, Ross Cullen, whether there were fears in Israel that the narrative has already shifted. Well, it was just last Saturday that 1,400 Israelis were killed in a massacre. They were massacred at a concert. They were massacred at different places where they thought they were safe. How concerned should Israel be that it seems like no matter what they do, even if they pause that imminent ground invasion, that they are the ones that are going to be seen as the aggressors?
Yeah, and invariably in the Middle East, that's why this has been set up this way by Hamas. Is that Israel is kind of damned if they do, damned if they don't. If they do nothing, they're inviting further attacks by Hamas and further aggression potentially down the road by Iran, especially as Iran races towards not only a nuclear weapon, but the delivery systems for a nuclear weapon. Those are two different technologies, topic for another day. But the longer this goes on, the wealthier Iran becomes because of the relaxation of sanctions. Now they have $70 billion in foreign currency reserves, where they had $4 billion when Trump left office. This situation is only going to get more dangerous for Israel, and it may end up being, and it may be that Israel feels that they have no choice. It's existential for them to go in to deal with Hamas and then deal with Iran now rather than later, and that's what's really scary.
John, is this now the unsolvable problem as far as global politics are concerned? Because I was just thinking, I think it was October 23rd, 1983, that Marine Corps barracks were blown up. 307 people dying in the Middle East because of what we believe to be an intractable situation 40 years ago.
Yeah, unsolvable problem it may be. There are a few ways out. One is that if Israel goes in and deals with Hamas and sends a message to Tehran and deals with it militarily and by mixture of brute force. Another way may be for Israel to negotiate or come to some sort of understanding potentially with some of these modern Arab states where Israel agrees to forego any further retaliation in exchange for immediate recognition.
How do we do that? They lost 1,400 of their citizens on Saturday, the equivalent of our 9/11, and even worse if you look at the percentages of their population.
Yeah, I'm not advocating that, Bill. I'm just saying there's several different paths that they can go down. The ultimate goal for Israel is somehow is peace or reconciliation with this Arab state. And they're going to have to decide how badly they want it. And it may or may not be worth the price. Again, I'm not suggesting that. But if they were to get that recognition really from Riyadh, for example, some of those other states, that would really put a hole in Tehran's drum. That would really thwart a lot of most of what they've been trying. So that's one choice, that's one possible path they might go, if the Israeli population will support it, and if the Arab leaders will go for it, too. Otherwise, we're looking at, I think, a continued escalation that may result in a regional war.
John, let me ask the question I asked another guest a little while ago. Is this a moment for bold leadership? And by bold leadership, I mean the president going into Gaza? Because one of the things that the people in the Palestinian territories believe is that the United States is not on their side, that the United States is on the side of Israel. And even though it is, the president has made it clear that he wants to make sure there are no civilian casualties. What would happen if the president were to risk getting out of the car in Gaza?
The Secret Service, I just don't, that is a bold step. First of all, the Secret Service would never allow that. There's no way to ensure safety there by any of the means that's normally Biden. Because you can't appease the Arabs, you can't appease Hamas, and you can't appease the Palestinians in that way. They elected Hamas. They largely support what happened in Israel. Some sort of gesture like that isn't going to go very far with them, unless because their end goal is the eradication of Israel. That's in the Hamas charter. And the overwhelming majority of Palestinians do support Hamas to some degree and are not going to tolerate any sort of neutrality. It's with us or against us. And that's why this is such a Gordian knot.
I should point out that there has not been an election in the Gaza Strip, what is it, I think in more than a decade. But that being said, I'll take you at your word where you think that they are supporting Hamas. But I want to move on to something else, which is that will there be American boots on the ground when all is said and done? Right now we're talking about carrier groups in the Mediterranean. We're talking about 2,000 soldiers headed to bases in the Middle East. Hezbollah now saying that if it's going to get involved, possibly. How concerned are you that this is actually going to escalate the one thing that nobody wanted?
Mission creep is always a risk here, Del. First of all, it's more of, if there is American military intervention, it will likely be with the use of air power. The 2,000 soldiers that have been given warning orders for deployment, short order deployment, are logisticians and medical personnel. Look for the United States, at least for as long as possible, with Israel actually being overrun. To providing that type of help, arms, logistics, and intelligence gathering, and possibly airstrikes. But it would only be as a very, very last resort that American troops are deployed there, and it would take a large number of which to do it, and a lot of the heavy equipment isn't present in Israel that they would need, too.
John Jordan, former Naval Intelligence Officer and also an overseer at the Stanford Hoover Institute. John, thanks for being with us. In Ukraine, President Volodymyr Zelensky saying Ukrainian forces successfully launching long-range missiles on the battlefield against Russia. Those missiles are known as ATACMS for Army Tactical Missile Systems. They were supplied by the United States, and it's the first time that they were used in this conflict. Our visual investigations correspondent Jake Bowden joins us now. Jake, for the details, even though they have been discreet, Zelensky saying the launch, in his words, was very accurate.
So this is the first time we're seeing this powerful new weapon be used by Ukraine. The U.S. have been reluctant to send these missiles to Ukraine due to their long range and over concerns that it might escalate tensions with Russia. Two air bases in Russian-occupied Ukraine were hit overnight using U.S.-provided Army Tactical Missile Systems, or ATACMS. One base in the south near the port city of Berdyansk and another in the east, near Luhansk. The Berdyansk airfield is about 100 miles from Ukrainian positions to the west.
Ukrainian assembly worker today, special thanks to the United States. Our agreements with President Biden are being implemented. They are executed very accurately. ATACMS have proven themselves.
The U.S.'s decision to provide Ukraine with ATACMS comes after more than a year of denying Ukraine's requests for the weapons. The concern was their long range could allow Ukraine to hit targets inside of Russia, potentially escalating diplomatic tensions between the U.S. and Russia. One video shared on the Telegram messaging platform shows raging fires in the middle of the night, with helicopter silhouettes visible in the foreground. The fires at the Berdyansk airport were large enough to be picked up this global fire map, which uses satellite data to detect large fires around the globe. Ukraine's military claims they were able to destroy 9 helicopters, an ammunition warehouse, and military equipment. Photos shared on the messaging app Telegram show what appear to be ATACMS munition remnants with 2 different serial numbers, indicating at least 2 missiles were used. More images shared by Russian military bloggers show the submunitions carried by the kinds of ATACMS the U.S. sent to Ukraine. Each missile carries 950 of these bomblets. Cluster munitions remain a controversial weapon banned by most countries. Part of their controversy revolves around the high dud rate for submunitions, meaning they can remain dangerous far long after they are used. The U.S. faced pushback from lawmakers earlier this year after it greenlit sending another kind of cluster munitions to Ukraine. We don't yet know how many ATACMS the United States has sent to Ukraine. Still,
Jay Gunn, reporting from Washington, D.C. Jake, as always, thank you very much. Still ahead, former President Donald Trump back inside the New York City courtroom today, but that much-anticipated face-to-face moment with a key witness in that case is going to have to wait. We'll be back at the very least. Stick with you.
When you see it,
some of the stuff that I'm showing you happening right now, as we cross over our ancestors, Ashe. Things are going on in the world, and I want you to know what's happening in Detroit, what's happening in Chicago, what's happening in Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas. Wherever you at, I want you to be aware of the evil that's going on in our neighborhood and the forces trying to keep us divided. It's important for us to know what's really going on, but we might take charge. I want to play Dr. King spoke down in Memphis.
Kind of general and panoramic view of the whole of human history up to now. And the Almighty said to me, Martin Luther King, which age would you like to live in? I would take my mental flight by Egypt. And I would watch God's children in their magnificent trek from the dark dungeons of Egypt through, or rather across the Red Sea, through the wilderness on toward the Promised Land. And in spite of its magnificence, I wouldn't stop there. I would move on by Greece and take my mind to Mount Olympus. And I would see Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, Euripides, and Aristophanes assemble around the Parthenon. I would watch them around the Parthenon as they discussed the great and eternal issues of reality, but I wouldn't stop there. I would go on even to the great heyday of the Roman Empire. And I would see developments around there through various emperors and leaders. But I wouldn't stop there. I would even come up to the day of the Renaissance and get a quick picture of all that the Renaissance did for the cultural and aesthetic life of man, but I wouldn't stop there. I would even go by the way that the man for whom I'm named had his habitat. And I would watch Martin Luther as he tacked his 95 theses on the door at the Church of Wittenberg, but I wouldn't stop there. I would come on up even to 1863 and watch a vacillating president by the name of Abraham Lincoln finally come to the conclusion that he had to sign the Emancipation Proclamation, but I wouldn't stop there. I would even come up to the early 30s and see a man grappling with the problems of the bankruptcy of his nation and come with an eloquent cry that we have nothing to fear but fear itself, but I wouldn't stop there. strangely enough, I would turn to the Almighty and say, if you allow me to live just a few years in the second half of the 20th century, I will be happy. Now, that's a strange statement to make because the world is all messed up. The nation is sick. Trouble is in the land. Confusion all around. That's a strange statement. But I know somehow that only when it is dark enough can you see the stars. And I see God working in this period of the 20th century in a way that men in some strange way are responding. Something is happening in our world. The masses of people are rising up, and wherever they are assembled today, whether they are in Johannesburg, South Africa, Nairobi, Kenya, Accra, Ghana, New York City, Atlanta, Georgia, Jackson, Mississippi, or Memphis, Tennessee, the cry is always the same. We want to be free. And another reason that I'm happy to live in this period is that we have been forced to a point where we are going to have to grapple with the problems that men have been trying to grapple with through history, but the demands didn't force them to do it. Survival demands that we grapple with them. Men for years now have been talking about war and peace. But now no longer can they just talk about it. It is no longer the choice between violence and nonviolence in this world. It's nonviolence or non-existence. That is where we are today. Also in the human rights revolution, if something isn't done and done in a hurry to bring the colored peoples of the world out of their long years of poverty, their long years of hurt and neglect, the whole world is doomed. Now, I'm just happy that God has allowed me to live in this period, to see what is unfolding. And I'm happy that he's allowed me to be in Memphis. I can remember when Negroes were just going around, as Ralph has said so often, scratching where they didn't itch and laughing when they were not tickled. But that day is all over. We mean business now, and we are determined to gain our rightful place in God's world. And that's all this whole thing is about. We aren't engaged in any negative protests and in any negative arguments with anybody. We are saying that we are determined to be men. We are determined to be people. We are saying, we are saying that we are God's children, and that we are God's children. We don't have to live like we are forced to live. Now, what does all of this mean in this great period of history? It means that we've got to stay together. We've got to stay together and maintain unity. You know, whenever Pharaoh wanted to prolong the period of slavery in Egypt, he had a favorite formula for doing it. What was that? He kept the slaves fighting among themselves. But whenever the slaves get together, something happens in Pharaoh's court, and he cannot hold the slaves in slavery. When the slaves get together, that's the beginning of getting out of slavery. Now let us maintain unity. Secondly, let us keep the issues where they are. The issue is injustice. The issue is the refusal of Memphis to be fair and honest in its dealings with its public servants who happen to be sanitation workers. Now, we've got to keep attention on that. That's always the problem with a little violence. You know what happened the other day, and the press dealt only with the window breaker. I read the article. They very seldom got around to mentioning the fact that 1,300 sanitation workers are on strike, and that Memphis is not being fair to them, and that Mayor Loeb is in dire need of a doctor. They didn't get around to that. Now we're going to march again, and we've got to march again in order to put the issue where it is supposed to be. And force everybody to see that there are 1,300 of God's children here suffering, sometimes going hungry, going through dark and dreary nights, wondering how this thing is going to come out. We've got to say to the nation, we know how it's coming out. When people get caught up with that which is right and they are willing to sacrifice for it, there is no stopping for it. Shout of victory. We aren't going to let any may stop us. We are masters in our nonviolent movement in disarming police forces. They don't know what to do. I've seen them so often. I remember in Birmingham, Alabama, we were in that majestic struggle there. He would move out of the 16th Street Baptist Church day after day. By the hundreds, we would move out, and Bull Connor would tell them to send the dogs for us. And they did come. But we just went before the dogs singing, "Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around." Bull Connor next would say, "Turn the fire hoses on." As I said to you the other night, Bull Connor didn't know history. He knew a kind of physics that somehow didn't